I think that the people I would most thank, it'd actually fall in two, maybe three buckets. Like everybody, I have a list of people that I'm like, it's my F you.
24/7. Steven. 24/7.
Welcome to It Takes a C-Tribe Village, where we learn about the environments and interactions of the unsung heroes, game changers, and innovators, and what has helped shape and define who they are today. Today on the podcast, we're interviewing Mark from the MH3 Collective, and who is actually, in full disclosure, a mentor of mine over the last decade. Now, as a side note, at the start of the podcast, we get into what MH3 means to Mark. And by the way, it might not be what you think, given that his initials are actually MH. There's more on that later. Mark is a true breed entrepreneur. He's been in the game for over 30 years. He's built a collection of ventures, including agencies that employ over hundreds of people across the creative and sponsorship landscape called Humanity and T1, respectively. He's also built a global community of marketing practitioners called Sponsorship X and a purpose-driven consulting firm called Psychic. And since he hasn't done enough, he's co-founded a couple of charities, including Park Street Education and the Black Talents Initiative, which, in full disclosure, again, I am fortunate to be a board member and one of the technology leads of the latter. In this podcast, we get into what is the Black Talents Initiative and how the organization has pivoted since its founding a few years ago. We also get into where things stand when it comes to equality and racism in Mark's eyes. We talk about what Mark's framework is when it comes to building companies. And again, it might not be exactly what you think it is, given that he has a very contrarian and different perspective. He also talks about the importance of selling yourself and the method of doing so. Now, that's selling yourself to yourself and not any other option. He gives some really articulate stories on how he goes to events, and basically, at the end of the night, he is the talk of the town or the talk of the event. Lastly, we talk about Mark's reflection on expressing gratitude and reflecting on past experiences to shape and share the vision for the future. Without further ado, let's get into this It Takes a C-Tribe Village podcast with Mark Harrison, the genius behind the MH3 Collective. My name is Sar, I'm Zakar, and I'm your host for today. Well, Mark, welcome to the It Takes a C-Tribe Village podcast. We are here live in your office in Toronto. Thanks for inviting us and for hosting us.
Is this really live?
So the camera's rolling, but it's not live. And you have the initials MH3. And it means more than just your initials. Can you maybe give us like the context and the background around MH3?
Yeah, they actually aren't my initials in the technical sense that, you know, if you were Sarah the third or fourth or the first. But there is no MH2 and there is no MH1. My favorite football player of all time is Gale Sayers. Have you ever heard of him?
Nope.
And Gale Sayers, his nickname was the Kansas Comet. He played for the Chicago Bears. He was a rookie. And the year that he was a rookie was the first year in the NFL that it was allowable for black players to room with white players.
To room?
Yes. So until then, they could play together in the same field.
Interesting.
They could break bones together. They could bleed together. But by no means were they allowed to sleep in the same room. So at training camp in the National Football League, it used to be that the black players went one way and white players went another. So Gale Sayers gets paired with a running back named Brian Piccolo. Brian's white, Gale's black. Gale's autobiography is I Am Third. It stands for God is first, my friends and family are second, and I am third. Mm. And I loved him. He was my kind of hero, even though his playing days kind of ended even before I really could watch a lot of football. Mm. But I read his autobiography. I read a lot of his book, his other stuff. And so I think somewhere as a teenager, I just started adding the three to my initials. Most people, maybe not quite as young as you, would know of Gale Sayers through a movie called Brian's Song.
Brian's Song.
Yeah. Never heard of it. And so there's two versions of Brian's Song. There's the original. Billy Dee Williams plays Gale Sayers. James Caan plays Brian Piccolo. And there's a Disney remake, because everything in life needs to be a freaking Disney remake. In fact, there's going to be a Disney remake of this live pod of you and I. I don't know who's going to play
we
you
might
or
use
me.
AI for that.
Yeah, we might. But that's my long-winded story. My initials, and if you look over on my wall there, you'll see some Gail Sayers photography and pictures. And so I just love the fact that Gail Sayers put his faith and his friends and family and himself third.
That might be a good segue into maybe a few years ago, you made a public LinkedIn post on the signing of Colin Kaepernick. And
yes.
This was post the news of George Floyd. And that has now transcended into a lot of the work that you were doing with BTI.
Yeah.
Can you maybe take us back to that moment and what was going through your mind, and what has kind of been the, what have you seen that has been maybe net good for the movement, and what do you think is some areas that still needs work?
So George Floyd's murder sent us all thinking. I walked up Yonge Street, which is kind of over my shoulder here, and just turned on, I don't know, I've never done that before, like just turned on my camera, talked to my camera and had a rant about how I was feeling. And in the end, my pitch to the National Football League was, if you as a league and organization want to do something about it, about equality, get Colin Kaepernick on a team. That was 2020, it's now 2024. That obviously didn't happen. That rant I then posted on LinkedIn. Many people, yourself included, reached out and said, how can I help? And we built the Black Talent Initiative, which is, I think, one tiny speck in the fight against racism. And so I'm very proud of having the Black Talent Initiative. We can talk about it as a structure, but I would say when I go back to your question about the movement and where are we, I'd say if we look at the world as a whole, I'm almost frightened that on many criteria around equality that we've actually gone backwards. And I think that one of the biggest struggles in the world right now is agency, which is, you know, your right as an individual versus systems. I think that's the world. I think as a country, we have people that have decided this isn't as important as other issues, and there are a lot of other issues. I think as a movement and people like yourself, both from a professional, a Black professional, a Black entrepreneur, and a Black change maker, we're doing stuff. But I've kind of flipped, and I'll get to this in a second, my personal emphasis on changing things. But I think holistically, the world's gone backwards on equality.
You flipped your personal emphasis on
The movement.
On the movement. How so?
I think when George Floyd was murdered, and the entire world discovered, depends on how you count, three letters, DEI, JEDI, belonging, take your pick, DEIB, pick your ESG, you know me. We were all focused on selling to corporate leaders that diversity was good for their bottom line. That's kind of the pitch,
yeah.
Right? You know what? None of us asked. Do those corporate leaders care?
About their bottom line,
yeah.
Or about diversity? Oh, interesting.
Yeah, about their bottom line. And if we had asked, you know what they might have said? My bottom line is fine. Thank you very much. Next. If you oversimplify sales is about you have a problem or I have a problem, and one of us has a solution. Mm. And without a problem, you can't sell anything. Mm. And unfortunately, despite what we all thought with the pandemic, despite what we even feel now about high interest rates and high inflation, business is good. The U.S. stock market is cooking with gas. Companies are doing well. People in private equity might say, oh, there's a freeze in the equity market. You know, there's lots of businesses doing well, raising money, et cetera. There's beyond full employment. Mm-hmm. So what's our pitch?
Hmm. And what has, after this analysis, what has been the outcome? How are you thinking about the pitch? Is there a pitch?
I'm looking at the new approach, which is we need more SARS. We need to equip Black men and women of your age, my age, and the generation coming up behind you and the generation behind that to succeed. And that is how you and I will succeed. We won't succeed by, there'll be some people that will say, yeah, diversity is the right thing to do. There'll be some people that say, I have no interest in your diversity sandwich, so go move on, right? There'll be some governments and some leaders. And I'm not giving up, but I have no interest in talking somebody into something they don't want to do. I believe that our legacy, and even though you're much younger than me, it will be part of your legacy. This won't get solved before you're done. But part of your legacy will be, we'll have equipped the new frontier leaders, and they will grow up with peers that will understand it has to be. We live in a country in Canada where the black population is going to double. In the United States, obviously, the Hispanic population is growing faster than the black population. But if you count all the different nuances, the birth of non-white babies has exceeded the birth of white babies in the United States since, I think, 2019, maybe 2020 now. We have to equip the future leaders so that they can become entrepreneurs, they can be academics, they can be doctors and teachers and lawyers, they can be change makers, they can be plumbers and electricians as well, they can be floor sweepers, but they are educated, they are participatory, they are active, and they are no longer victims. That is my approach.
And someone looking at this can maybe be in agreement in hearing this angle.
Yeah.
But then when we maybe put our business model hat on in terms of how this becomes sustainable. I think there too, as you rightfully mentioned, there is a long-term and long-term thinking approach to this where, you know, if we do this and if we make the effort today, that in the future, you know, the return on investment for the community will be there. But as a, maybe as a grassroots organization that's trying to make this impact and do this work, and I think as you mentioned, maybe getting kicked out the front door because it's not necessarily resonating with the folks that might have, you know, the resources to make the impact today. What would you say to those individuals? How would you, as a business person yourself, and we'll get into your background in a minute, but what is the pitch? How does something sustainable build from something like this today?
Let's be clear. By no means do I think there's one solution. I think there are a myriad of solutions. And so I was answering a question of how I've changed.
Gotcha.
And that's my mindset.
Yeah.
Because I'm sick and tired of hearing people present that diversity is great for the bottom line and then standing around at the cocktails going, why aren't we making progress? Because we have the wrong freaking pitch, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But my opinion is just one opinion.
Yeah.
And you know me, and I can be a bit hard driving. I think back to your question though, and I think this is important for all businesses. You know, people love to use the terms like authenticity and genuine and purpose, and they mix all this soup. I'm a firm believer that there is going to be thousands of organizations like the Black Towns Initiative, and each of us is going to have our niche, and our niche might be determined by the people who organize it, our niche might be determined by our immediate stakeholders, and our niche might be determined by the people we serve. And I think early on at Black Talent Initiative, we spent a lot of time internally debating, putting our talent at the heart. Mm-hmm. I think the mistake we made is talent's always going to be at the heart of what we do, but where are we solving that problem right now? So back to your point, my proof of concept, borrowing that term from you, is that we have a nice stable of partners, and in the last few months, we've gone out and had a much more commercial conversation, if I can say it that way, with new partners that says, in short, we're trying to battle racism, empowering future leaders. Are you on board? Our old pitch was, black people aren't getting a fair shake. Will you help them get jobs? This is actually resonating on a more deeper strategic level with organizations than handing us a check to do a resume writing clinic.
So you mentioned legacy, and you've had a very accomplished career and entrepreneurial journey. what encourages you to still keep doing this work? I mean, you can proverbially be in Mexico or Africa or somewhere on the beach right now, kicking your feet up and you know, enjoying the fruits of your labor.
Yeah.
But what keeps you this driven and motivated and showing up every single day doing this work?
Well, you said I've had, and I would say I'm having. So this is not past tense for me. I'm in the middle of it. This live podcast is being filmed on my birthday. And a lot of colleagues have said to me, well, here in our organization, people get our birthday off. And I love what I do, and I'm blessed because I love what I do. So I'm happiest spending my birthday talking to you, raising money for the Black Talent Initiative, raising money for Park Street, organizing conferences. But I think at its simplest, even before George Floyd was murdered, when I had done nothing for the Black community, which is one of the reasons why getting together with you and other people building the Black Talent Initiative is important, I think I've always had purpose, and not necessarily saving the world or saving trees or saving puppies. The purpose is, why do I get out of bed to do what I do? So when I launched T1, our purpose was to help our clients get promoted. And I always use this expression, that wasn't us necessarily selling more Nissans, that was us helping Natalie do her job. And I think for a lot of reasons, the way I was raised, my family environment, my influences, that having purpose, having a meaning has been vital. And so even today, I'll use a real life example where on a Teams chat, somebody was sort of making some comments about, oh boy, this is a lot of something. I'm trying not to give their identity away, but it was like, you know, there's a lot of admin related to something. And they're almost sort of saying, like, I've done it, and why do we have to do all this? And this person wasn't junior. And they put it in a group chat. And I probably could have side-slacked them and said, hey, come on, you're not being a great role model. Or I probably could have said something like, to be sarcastic or be me, and you've heard this, like, well, if you're more organized, then you wouldn't have had to do this, right? And instead, what I said was, thanks for doing it, because providing this level of detail allows our individual groups to go out and provide customized offerings to their clients. And that will provide them with more motivation to do it, which in turn is actually going to be better for our partner. That ramble is the why. And how many times in your life have you been asked to do something, or asked someone to do something, encouraged to do something, or made a pitch, and you realize you talked about the doing, but why? Why am I meeting with you? Why when you and I met years ago and you reached out, did I take time out to sit with you? And that wasn't me just being generous, that was also me being selfish. But there was a why to all of it, right? Why did you become an entrepreneur? Why did you start Sea Tribe? Why did your parents decide to raise you a certain way? And why do they act in a certain way each and every day to be those role models? Yeah. And it's hard when you're busy, I'm sure you'd agree, to remember the why.
For sure. And it's funny because we just finished a conversation, and one of the individuals actually worked directly with T1, and she was mentioning how much work y'all did together and how long the longevity in the relationship and whatnot. So I think it speaks volumes to the ability to, you know, curate and lead a team that is very much in the details and in the weeds and focusing on delivering value to your end customer. Because, you know, 3 hours ago we were just having a conversation and we showed the T1 logo on the board and there was nothing but good things to say. So,
nice. You
know, I think there's a lot of, powerfulness behind that. And, you know, Mark, we didn't get a chance to kind of touch on your background and experience, but, you know, you have been in the game, you know, as an entrepreneur for a very long time.
It'll be 30 years in May. You can say it out loud.
I'm not going to put a number out there, but if you want to.
My business is older than you.
Well, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Where did the journey start for you?
The journey started before I knew it started. So I was adopted, and I won the adoption lottery and the Harrisons raised me and they are my parents. The people that created me are not my parents, although I have a lot of, I owe a lot to my biological mother because of what she went through, and I owe nothing to my biological father. But I think the magical thing for me, and look, everybody has a story. Everybody has a journey. I think for me, I won the adoption lottery, but I also had this realization from being told at an early age, like, here's who you used to be, and then we adopted you. And I was quite young, I was a baby, but I was with my mother for a little bit, but birth mother. But that realization, like, oh my gosh, some judge could have assigned me to a family that didn't provide love, that didn't provide a framework. And I always thought that. And so I always said, no matter what I do, I'm going to control my destiny. Didn't necessarily mean I had to be an entrepreneur, but didn't mean I had to own my own career. And I don't mean to sound like I'm a pompous critic, but I'm not convinced that as many people own their own life as they should. They have excuses. And it's easy to make excuses. We all make them. But for me, that's where it began. And so, you know, growing up, lots of paper routes. I was the guy who would create his own job. If I got hired somewhere and I saw something else that I could do, I was the one putting up my hand. We all had our little side hustles and schemes. I'm a little worried about the authorities chasing me down for some of the things I did in high school, so I'm going to park that. But, you know, the technical answer, I worked for one marketing company for 7 years, quit, and started my own agency at 29. And we can get more into that. But I do think it's important for everybody listening. The foundation in my own motivation is to control my own destiny.
I've been asked this question. I was having a conversation this past weekend in terms of there's almost a level of me as an entrepreneur believing that, I think very similar to you, that I'm very lucky to be here, right? I was, I had a twin brother at birth. I was the only one that ended up making it out. And I was born in a little village in West Africa. My parents immigrated to Canada when I was 3 years old. And when I kind of backtrack, and I didn't realize this then, obviously, but now there's almost a level of like, you know, like, wow, like the chances of me being here is almost next to none. And
right.
It goes as far as even knowing that my mom has a sister who has twin sons who live in Africa, and they look, talk, and walk exactly like me, but for whatever reason, I'm here in Canada with tremendous opportunities to be in a beautiful city, beautiful office, beautiful friends, beautiful opportunities in a country like this. And, you know, they don't have that same opportunity.
Yeah.
And there is just so much gratitude and appreciation.
It's amazing.
And almost like a survivor's bias about it, where you almost feel that you owe much more to the foundation that gave it to
like
you.
Like a survivor's guilt.
Survivor's guilt,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And by the way, like, I would absolutely love to see you with those other two dudes. And I'm sorry I did not know about your brother, and that makes me sad.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's because part of the conversation I was having with my friend this weekend was that, you know, we went to university together. We both took the entrepreneurial path. And he always used to say that, you know, sorry, like, you're so level-headed. You know, it doesn't seem there isn't much that rattles you or takes you off guard. And in our culture, when your twin brother or twin sister passes at birth, in our culture, it's almost like you're almost taking them with you, like along your life
journey. You've got twice the responsibility.
The responsibility and you're taking their good assets too.
Got it. Yeah.
Right? And you know, and yeah, so you know, I kind of look at it more as a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, is there, when you're kind of in your moments of gratitude and appreciation and leveraging it to, I think, as you kind of put control your destiny, is there any, like, level of, maybe not, like, negative thoughts that come from it, but things that maybe make you like feel almost like you maybe you're very lucky to have this opportunity? And
yeah, I mean, look, life isn't perfect, and I bet you, like I do, we can be really good at beating ourselves up on the inside. And I would say there's lots of things that I would like to improve in myself, but I'm not going to suggest for a second there's lots of things I wish I'd done differently, because that's just BS, that I should have done them differently. But yeah, if you're not being like, of course I have moments of doubts, and of course I have moments of questioning, and of course I have moments of criticizing. But ultimately, and I think I've lost a little bit of the thread of your question, so I apologize. I feel like it's my job to own it. And by owning it, I have a deep sense of like, I'm getting out of bed every day because I own it. And I think that then for me, I want to translate that into people around me. Like, you should own it as well. And own it for what works for you. One of my bad tendencies as a people manager, and I actually don't think I'm a very good people manager, is I'll often see somebody who's amazing at a role and so talented, and I will bring this unfair elitist bias that they should be doing something more elevated. And literally years ago, I built a business with a guy, and his EA came with us, and she was phenomenal. I'm like, you're way too good to be an EA, which is a horribly, disgustingly elitist thing to say. But, you know, I grew up in that old school world of going to university was important, and, you know, community college wasn't so important, and now it's hilarious because it's flipped, and the trades were not important. Now they're super important. And so I moved her into a job that she was miserable in, and she probably lasted 11 weeks, came and said, that's not me. I need to be me.
Yeah.
And if I actually look back on it, that was the most authentic human being I've ever met in my life, and I hate that world, that word. But she was like, this is what I am great at. So did I completely lose the train of your question?
No, that's okay. It's a good segue, because you talked about people management, and you talked about leadership and being in business since you were 27. After you started that marketing company at such a young age, I think you said 27 or 29.
29, but I like the 27. Okay. I was pretty happy about that.
Yeah, you look 27 and 29.
You know what? I appreciate that.
How did it flourish and proliferate into kind of what T1 is today?
Yeah.
What has kind of spun off from the, I think, MH3 Ventures or MH3
Collective?
Yeah. Sorry. And if there are a couple frameworks that you can give people, what would be those frameworks as to how you just survive as an entrepreneur and building a proliferating business?
So we're, you know, look, we're a small business. We're 80, 100 people. MH3 Collective has T1, which is full stack sponsorship, Humanity, which is a brand transformation agency. I am one of four equal partners in a new venture called Sidekick. We have Sponsorship X, our conference, which is how we met. We have Park Street Education, which is our charity, which helps 500 marginalized children a year with free tutoring, and the Black Talent Initiative. Six things in the collective. That's today. When I started the business, I had never worked in sports marketing, but I launched a sports marketing company. And my line to my friends, which was kind of silly, is I love sports, I love marketing. There's this industry called sports marketing, which I knew a little bit about. But the first framework I'll say is, how do you build a brand and a book of business when you have nothing? You know, quit my job, had a little office in my den of my house, sit down at my desk. I read a business book back then that said, you know, wear a suit even when you work out of a home office. So I had a suit on, tie, the whole package. And I'm looking at the phone's not ringing. So the first framework I would say is how the benefit of today is everybody, every entrepreneur has an entire, they got a film production company and a mixing board and a marketing present, like in here, right? You've got everything, your marketing department, your production, suppliers, you name it. But I think the first thing that I did from a framework standpoint is I built credibility in a field that I had no credibility. So that would be one, and I'll talk about how I did that. The second framework is I got to understand the power of money, right? So whoever wrote Cash is King, which is very sexist, let's just say cash is royalty, It's not about how much money you make, but it's the need to have cash to function your operations. And too many entrepreneurs jump in. And then the most important framework, which I could have brought up first, is understanding that the most important sale you'll make every day is to yourself. And so I would apply those three things to, if you want to build a unicorn, if you want to build a lifestyle business, if you want to buy a side hustle, which is like, how do you build awareness and credibility in yourself? Because, and that extends to every product in the world, right? Like, you know, this is not the best phone in the world. We've been told it is, but it isn't.
Well, can you expand on those points a little bit more?
Yeah.
So, building credibility,
yeah.
Or maybe let's start at the end.
Sure.
Selling to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, what does that mean? How do you, what does that day-to-day look like when you're selling to yourself as Mark Harrison?
So for me, it's an extreme reliance on planning my day related to what I want to achieve, to the point of I have a daily journal that I've actually built using, it's kind of weird, it doesn't look like a journal on the outside, but I actually use the Numbers app and I built this thing, but it used to be a handwritten journal. And now it's sort of like a big, think of a big workbook, but I use Numbers and I formatted everything up I love and I don't show it to anybody, so don't ask. And inside of there, I plan my days and my weeks and my months and I score myself every day.
Wow.
And I look back 1 week, 1 month, 1 year every day. And I look forward 1 month and 1 year every day. So I live in this 24-month moving time cycle. Hmm. That's all I want to look forward, and that's all I want to look back. And inside of that, the selling comes from, this is what I'm going to get done today, and what did I do? The selling comes from writing three affirmations every day. You're an athlete. You know, I like to ask people, what color are Usain Bolt's eyes?
What colors are
Usain Bolt's eyes? Do you know?
Brown.
Maybe, but how would you know? Because you've never beaten him in a race. Nobody knows, right? Life and business is like sports, right? There's a scorecard. I had a startup once with an arrogant billionaire who, you know, he asked me why I was doing this. And I said, you know, I want to help as many, it was to support entrepreneurs. I want to help as many entrepreneurs be successful as possible. Would that be going public or growing whatever? And he said, bah. He said, in my street, and we're in his house in Richieville, it's about how much money you have. Like that was his Gordon Gekko-ish answer. I don't disagree that a scoreboard's important. That isn't my scoreboard. Mm-hmm. So for me, selling to myself, I love sports. So I gamify it. Mm. I score myself every day. I have 7 objectives and goals every day.
Wow.
I write out how I did against them. And I write my results in red, yellow, green.
Wow.
And you can understand what green's for and what red's for. Every day there's a scoreboard. Think about when you were playing. Now, it might have been, how many stops did you have? Mm-hmm. Might have been how many assists did you have? Might have been how many charges did you take? It might have been, but there was a number.
Yeah, I'm doing this challenge. It's called the 75-day challenge. Well, I completed the 75-day challenge, and then now I'm on the 30-day challenge. It's a smaller, cool, more condensed,
yeah,
version. But it's interesting when you kind of gamify the experience, because in this case with the challenge, you have to, you know, eat a certain way. There's,
yep,
you know, a couple workouts you have to do.
Love
every
it.
Single day. You have to read 10 pages and, you know, a few other things. But just that ability to look at this kind of itinerary that was initially imaginary, but now it's concrete and, mm-hmm, in front of you. And as a very competitive person myself, just the satisfaction that I get from just checking off each task every single day.
So we're doing the same thing.
That calendar that you can kind of look at, because you have to complete the challenge in 30 days straight.
Right.
Right. So if you fail per se, if you don't make it through a day, then you have to start from zero. And you know, initially I was pretty scared to take it on because it's like, well,
shoot, what if I'm traveling on a certain day?
I remember I was doing the 75-day challenge. I got to day 67, and if you can imagine, for 66 days before that, I was working out every single day, and I woke up that next day, just couldn't feel my legs, my feet were on fire, but you kind of just had this app on your phone that it just kind of pushed you, and you gamified the experience and, yeah, stuff, right? Is on...
Can I just go slightly back to the sales piece?
Sure, yes.
So besides my tools, let me also go back to the why. You want to be an entrepreneur people think it's, I need to get customers. You and I both know, no, no, you need to get suppliers. Yeah. You need to get employees. You need to get raise money. Like, you are always selling. Mm-hmm. And so I will give people like a very simple, don't go to any more meetings in your entire life without giving yourself a pep talk. You know, I love the Al Pacino any given Sunday, crawling through the mud. But find a moment. Stop doing these back-to-back meetings and prepare for the meeting. And say to yourself, this is what I want as my outcome, and this is how I'm going to do it. And also say to yourself, if this meeting goes completely sideways, this is how I'm going to react. I guarantee you that if you take 5 minutes before every meeting in the next couple of weeks, your meeting outcomes will be entirely different. Guarantee you. Guarantee you.
It's kind of... I don't know if you follow Tim Ferriss at all, but he has this kind of philosophical approach where he trains his mind for both the best case outcome and also the worst case outcome.
Love it. Maybe I need to read this guy.
Yeah, I think it kind of comes from some kind of...
But he was probably a Navy SEAL or something, and I'm just a dummy from Aurelia.
Well, before we kind of get into that...
Sorry, keep going.
Yeah, no, I was just...
Tim Ferriss, I'm writing that down.
Tim Ferriss, yeah, he has... I forgot what the... It's a practice.
Isn't he like the 4 minute work day or 4 day work?
Yeah, 4 day work week.
Yeah, 4 hour work week or something. Yeah.
Yeah, 4 day work week.
Yeah.
But yeah, and the whole practice behind that is, I think as you kind of shared, there's a level of kind of seeing and feeling it before it actually happens.
Yeah.
And believing it before it happens. While at the same time, preparing yourself for the worst case scenario. Because in our heads, we can sometimes like over exacerbate like how bad something can be. Mm-hmm. And that feeling and emphasis on that overemphasis can actually be more detrimental than the thing itself, right? So when you kind of practice this this exercise of putting yourself in the situation where the bad thing happens, yeah. And being like, hey, this A, it's not as bad as I thought it was.
Yep.
And B, I'm prepared to actually tackle this and yep. stuff. The first thing that you brought up was building credibility.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
I think it's about thought leadership. I think it's about getting into the rooms. I think it's about having an opinion. And having an opinion that is additive and it can be controversial, but not necessarily at the expense of somebody else. And it's something that people know you for. And I don't think enough people in the world have an opinion or a point of view on things. And so for me, way back, it was, I've told the story too many times, so if it sounds repetitive to somebody who, for whatever reason, heard me babble on about it before, when the phone wasn't ringing, I was like, how am I going to meet people? So I actually started an industry newsletter about sports marketing, sponsorship, etc. I started typing it up and putting it on graphics on whatever word processor I was using in the mid-90s. I was faxing it to people. I actually have a friend who remembers me getting my newsletter. I faxed it to them.
Wow.
And then because I was quasi-media, I then wormed my way into press conferences and industry conferences. So Blaco is now going to sponsor the Ontario Volleyball Association. I got on the Ontario Volleyball Association's media list. And, you know, all of a sudden I was in the room. And you know that half the battle is getting in the room.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, if you're in the room, and maybe you didn't even get to talk to somebody, and now it's so different, this thing, but you got to remember when I started my businesses, like, you met people in person, or you called them, or you mailed them a brochure, you faxed them. We didn't use email. Like, my first email account was CompuServe. Hmm. We didn't use email to market ourselves. Do you know why? People didn't have email. Yeah. Like, you know, like this was a lot of personal stuff. Yeah, and yeah. Companies didn't have email address. People didn't have email.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, like, I remember my one and only job. I lobbied and got 6 computers for my little team. And the other teams were mad because they had to write their stuff out by hand and hand it to their admins. And they typed it up, or maybe that And we literally had these things networked with cables on the floor, right? Like that was our WW dot was six computers.
Yeah, wow.
So the point is, and I'm going to jump a little bit aside here too. When I talk about thought leadership, you and I, you get asked a lot to do information interviews, to provide mentorship, to provide feedback to people.
Probably one more than others.
But it happens all the time.
Yeah.
The number of times people sit down with me and they tell me, I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers aficionado. I know everything about them. And I'm making this up. And I'm sitting there looking at them, trying not to be a dick. Because you know what I did before I met with them? Mm. I went on their LinkedIn. Mm. And their LinkedIn is their billboard. It's their poster to the world. Their LinkedIn tells me everything about them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I didn't see Jack about Pittsburgh Steelers on your thing. You're just playing to me because you know I'm a Steelers fan. And the point is, I have people tell me I'm strategic, I'm creative, I'm an expert. I'm like, you have the worst LinkedIn profile in the history of the world. So right now you are underemployed because you literally are like telling me everything that you are. But like, I would say this about me. I try to lead by example. So I'm a big fan of networking. People don't like that, that's fine. I have the coolest networking approach in the world, and I'll share it with the world about going to events. It's my favorite tip. I got it from somebody else. But I like putting myself out there. I like having an opinion. I like writing blogs. I like doing stuff. And if you don't like it, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I have a point of view. I'm not trying to convince you of my point of view. I am trying to change you, but not to adhere to me. But I'm always trying to move you. But I'm never worried about you aligning with me. That's not what's vital.
And so what's your networking tip?
At events, live events.
Yeah.
Find your spot, don't leave. People will come to you.
Like your physical spot.
Yep.
Gotcha.
Find it. And I'm like a big fan of like a little leaner, little back thing. Close to like bar food, but not in the way. Able to see 2/3 of the room. And you would be amazed. And I've gone to hundreds, maybe millions. Is that an exaggeration? Millions?
Could be up there.
Okay. I've gone to somewhere between hundreds and millions of events. And I will stand there and look like the happiest person in the world to be by themselves. And people can't resist. They can't get it. They're watching you. They're like this. They see you there. They got their food. They're talking to their friends. Like these are events where I don't know anybody.
Yeah.
And then finally, something comes over. They always come over.
Yeah.
They always come over. They might ask me to check their coat, but they always come over.
So.
And you know that's happened to you. You know that's happened to you.
It's been worse. There's been worse.
Yeah. Right. Coats. Give me another drink. Check my car. Yeah. You know. Yeah.
You know, speaking on events, you know, the first time that we had an opportunity to meet was at the event that you were hosting for Sponsorship X.
Yeah.
And, you know, I still kind of remember this experience and moment vividly. I was with my partner at the time, my business partner, and we were just starting our marketing agency.
Yeah.
And we never really had gotten exposed to sponsorship marketing.
Right.
But I think one of the brilliant things that, you know, you did in terms of and what your team did was kind of embedded this idea of a marketing conference tied in with an experiential activation through the NBA.
Yep.
And
it was, you know, NBA All-Star that you came to.
NBA All-Star weekend, yes.
Yeah.
And that was enough for myself and my business partner to, you know, purchase two tickets, attend this event. And I would probably say that was one of the, if not the first conference that I stayed from the start until the finish. And I mean, through everything from the talks and the keynotes and the presentations that you had, to also the experiential activations where we got a chance to attend the, I think the NBA versus, or sorry, the rookie versus sophomore.
Yeah, the Young Guns, yeah.
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 What's your approach when you think about the events that y'all co-create, and what do you think has been, where do you think you've been able to kind of build that level of longevity? Because you've been doing this for quite some time. Mm-hmm. You know, when we, before we got on this recording, you were saying that you just confirmed a reasonably big opportunity, at, you know, a big activation here. Yep. in North America.
Yeah.
So what's been your approach to the co-creation of experiences, and how do you develop that longevity in the space?
I think, so I love events because I think if I had gone into a different line of business, it would have been, you know, curated travel and hospitality. And I think about a conference as being like going on vacation. Mm-hmm. And yes, we want to have the pillars of giving you great information. We want to have a pillar of inspiring you. We want to have that pillar of like inviting you into our community. But I really think that if I'm asking you to not only cut that check, but you talked about that more valuable resource, which was your time, because it's so easy to check out of a conference. I did the first day, did the first day and a half or whatever. Mm-hmm. And how do you keep people coming? I think it's about, this is actually, you're going on a professional vacation. Mm. And and so I want you to get lots out of it. But that for me is really key. And then, you know, as a person who will often say to people, don't market to yourself, I'll be transparent. When I build the conferences, I actually market to myself. Mm. And I think, does this lunch have enough time that I can get my food, do some email, and meet somebody new? Is the conference starting at 8:30 or 9, which is an annoying time in Toronto because, you know, it's actually, I get up early and I get to work early, but depending where you're getting to, it can be hard to get there. Mm-hmm. Should it start a little bit later and be really clear about that? You know, how do you make sure that people that come to the conference, in this case, you came with your business partner, but I will tell you a secret that we often on those big events, I brief the team. If you see somebody coming in standing alone, acting weird, go get them to check your coat. No, I'm kidding. Go up and introduce yourself and make sure that people, because I've gone to lots of conferences in different markets, often as a speaker. In fact, I did this as a test. I went to a social media event that I was paid to be a keynote at, fall of 22. And I got there the day before my keynote. I'd love to go in and hear other speakers, hear what's going on. And then I went to their networking event. And actually, I stood at this event and nobody from the conference came up and greeted me. Which I thought was interesting because there's lots of staff around. I had lots of salespeople come up because they're wondering if they could qualify me. And then I had somebody else come up and just say, hey, this might sound awkward. Like, are you here alone? I'm like, yeah, I'm here alone. I'm like, oh my God, I'm here alone too. And like, I don't really know anybody. And so the two of us just started chatting and then we had like a conference buddy, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't weird to me, but I get it for them because yeah. I was being Mr. Because I used to be that person to sort of look. And so when it comes to designing those events, like how do I design that curation? And then I like to go to other events and see what they're doing and see what they're doing well. But I also think of like, what's going to make me want to be there? And I'll say one of the hardest parts is like briefing speakers and especially people who have spoken at things like, yes, I get it, but here's how what we know about our conference. And mm-hmm. so... Yeah, it's not easy. And look, our events are smaller and bespoke. And I kind of glossed over it. I do love going, like there's a couple of events. You've heard me talk about one of the innovation festivals I've gone to in Austria 3 or 4 times. And I love a lot of what they do because they have, it's like a big event, big conference, like 6,000-7,000 people. They don't call their trade show a trade show. They call it the loyalty program.
The loyalty program.
Yeah. So that when they are working with partners who want to activate, there's no 10 by 10 booths. Mm. It's what can we curate together physically, digitally, emotionally, that will allow you to secure customers and make them, you know, loyal to you for life.
I love that.
Yeah. I'm going to steal that.
Me too. The last question I had is, you know, given that the theme for this podcast is that it takes a C-Tribe village.
Yeah.
Are there people in your life that you wish you can say thank you to more? And why is that the case? Why do you want to say thank you to them? Yeah, what would you say if you had that opportunity?
I don't think I say thank you enough. I think I'm a little bit of, I get so much back from the doing that I think everybody else does. So I feel like we wrap something up and we're all on the same high. And other people are great at the thank yous, the follow-ups, the gift basket, the note, the recognition. And so I think I need to do that more. I'll probably get a little emotional if I went down the list of people that I need to say thank you to, because a lot of them unfortunately passed away. Not necessarily just because I'm old and they were older, but in some cases, disease or other things struck them down a little bit too early. But I would say, number one, I need to thank everybody more. I think that the people I would most thank, it actually fall in two, maybe three buckets. I have a, like everybody, I have a list of people that I'm like, it's my F you. Okay. So the guidance counselor who told me I shouldn't go to university and I should enroll in this air traffic controller program, which I think was probably 99% racially motivated. The science teacher who got pissed off because I signed my exam when I handed him, please give me a good mark, Harrison. And he wrote back this long rant about give, like you earn, like, and it was like, you know what, just screw off. You're gonna, and not, there's nothing wrong with being a high school science teacher. My dad was a high school teacher. I love him to death, respect everything. But like I was joking, right? And I mean, did I need your stupid handwritten rant? Which, by the way, he then went and told my parents. But like, just I kind of look at people like that. I was the president of our student council. A scene right out of It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart happened because we had a student dance and the cash box went missing. And my treasurer, who's an amazing young woman, most honest human ever, she was accused. We were accused of stealing the money from school dance. And we were convinced that it was in the bottom locked drawer. This is like a scene out of a bad movie, of the staff advisor. And he refused to open up that drawer because like, I didn't put the money box away. Jeez. He refused. We were literally on the verge of suspension.
Oh my gosh.
With the school. When I said, okay, to the principal, that's fine. You'll be hearing from my lawyers. Unless we can go up there and open that. Like, that's where it is. It was there. We're like 17 years old being accused by adults of stealing money, right?
Wow. So did they open it?
Yes.
And they found it?
Yes, it was there.
Oh, my gosh. Did anything happen to the...
No. And I think of that staff advisor, who never should have been the staff advisor of student council. That staff advisor told me to not go into anything in my career people-related. He said I had the worst people skills in the world. Okay. No, I was a dick. But you can be a dick and have good people skills. Those are two different things. Right? Mm-hmm. So those are people where I look at and go, you doubted me. And I will say immaturely that when I went back to my 10-year high school reunion, I made pretty sure that I drove my... Oh, by the way, sorry, let me back up. I was staying at my parents. They lived 57 yards from the high school that I went to.
57 yards.
57. Okay, because I had the wheel. Uh-huh. When I went back for a high school reunion, there's a bunch of events, right? Of course, there's one at the school.
Yeah.
I made sure that I got in my brand new BMW 3 Series lime green coupe and drove it out of my parents' driveway, the 57 yards, and I pulled in and I parked it in the principal's parking spot. Because I wanted to show the world I'd made it.
Yeah.
But in the world of people, I think, this is a long answer, I'm sorry.
It's okay. I like how you reverse psychology that too. So.
Yeah. There are three wise men, Gord, Bob, and Marco. And they taught me when I was working in promotional marketing, everything about print production, everything about artwork design, everything about film separation. They were vendors that I used for production, for displays and stuff. And they sort of took me under their wing because A, I was given a lot of money, and B, I wanted to learn. So I'd go to press approvals on the weekends and learn all the nuances of how printing on leather versus paper indoor and outdoor worked. They would sit down with me and have lunch and talk about how to deal with difficult clients. One of them gave me the best sales advice in the world. I was working at this marketing agency, which we didn't even talk about. It was a disaster. I was on the FM Canada account, M&M Mars, and I was trying to rebuild it and make it bigger. And if you've ever gotten into a Mars office globally, they're open concept, all their offices. And so let's pretend this is the Mars Canada office. There's 250 people working in one room with boardrooms on the outside.
250, you said?
Yeah.
Wow.
In Hackettstown, New Jersey, there's like literally 2,000 or 3,000 in one room. And they all have a desk like maybe twice the size of this. Jeez. They have one filing cabinet, but it's their concept. Oh. And it's all about collaboration. I actually would love to know what they're doing now, kind of post-pandemic. That's another meeting. So in the middle, the country manager sat, and then you quadded out by business. Pet care, confectionery, food, admin. And at first, I was only working on pet care. So I'd come in, check in reception, walk down here, pet care people here, a couple meeting rooms. And one of my mentors said, I was talking about growing this account. And he said to me, well, how do you go to the washroom? I said, well, that's a personal question. He said, no, like, how do you get there? Because the washroom's over here. And I said, well, I retrace my steps, go here to the corridor. He says, no, start wandering. So I started wandering. Hmm. And all of a sudden, people would weigh me down. Hey, you're from that company. You've been helping the pet care team with that promotion. Yeah. I work on the rice business, and we're thinking about doing a promotion. Do you have time to stop by and see me today? Hmm. So I also started not just going up there and back, but leaving cushion time. Hmm. And by wandering, I end up picking up, over the course of about a year and a half, I had the entire business of that account.
Wow.
And to just dimensionalize it for you, and these are real dollars back a long time ago. Okay, this is my first job, I'm 22. When I started that business, we were making like literally a $5 a month retainer. I'm just gonna use approximates.
Gotcha.
And by the time I left that business in 6 years, we were making a $75 a month retainer.
Wow. Jeez, from that one account?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I wandered.
Yeah.
Then I drank a lot of water and I peed a lot. And for a lot of you worried out there, I washed my hands. But literally, that's the wrong setup. One of the most important wins was I was in the men's room, and next to me was a very senior guy in one division who I'd really had a hard time cracking. And it's that awkward men's room thing. He looks over me and says, you're the guy who works on all this stuff, right? Well, yeah, he goes, I want to talk to you about my business. And I'm kind of like, don't say anything stupid, because I'm like, now, you know? And I said, sure, when's good? And he says, what are you doing in 15 minutes? So literally, and that actually was probably 50% of those billings. Hmm. Being in the right bathroom at the right time, that should be the moral of the story. Hmm. And I'm going to go back to, maybe that wasn't your last question, but I'm going to go back to where we started about the movement. What I'm hoping is that you and I and other people that have had a little measure of success can talk to other Black folks that haven't been taught, don't understand, or haven't had somebody share with them the wandering concept or building thought leadership or whatever, because if they do that, then they'll succeed. Mm-hmm. And then when they succeed, they'll have power and they'll have agency and they'll have clout. And when we think about where racism lives in its strongest forms, in our legislative systems, in our educational systems, in our healthcare systems, in our judicial systems, that those people will become doctors, politicians, policymakers, voters that have standing in the community that politicians are seeking their support and their endorsement, and then we'll combat racism.
Yeah, yeah.
Going in and pitching company X, Y, and Z that diversity is good for the bottom line, it's not going to solve racism.
So that's maybe a good segue to the final question. There is a big celebration and event coming up end of February.
Yeah.
Can you share a little bit more of what it is, what attendees can expect,
yeah,
and where folks can find more information?
They can find more information at the Black Talent Initiative website, or just find me on LinkedIn, which is my poster of the world, and you'll see links. So Hilda, Lash, Tatiana, people like yourself, really, I'm gonna call out Hilda, Lash, Tatiana with support from Rachel and Anshul, have built this event called Ignite. It's a Black History Month celebration, a Black Talent Initiative. We're gonna have 3 days of workshops, conversation, inspiration. Day one is gonna be for entrepreneurs. Day two is gonna be for corporate leaders. Day three is gonna be for change makers. And so you're gonna hear from senior Black leaders and organizations and people that want to become senior Black leaders. You're gonna hear from successful entrepreneurs. You're gonna hear from successful change makers. You're gonna get a chance to sit and work through stuff, resilience training, how do I open doors, et cetera, with your peers. It's February 27th, 28th, 29th. It's a leap year this year, mm-hmm. if you knew that.
Yeah.
And Microsoft has jumped on board as our presenting sponsor. They're gonna be hosting it at their downtown Toronto offices. And I think that, you know, you made a great comment about attending my event. We've structured this event to be kind of 3 one-day events, but if you decide to come for 3 days, not saying you have to, I think it'd be about 3 days of how are we equipping one another to combat racism. And there will be lots of room for, I kind of don't love this term ally, but anybody, Black, white, purple, et cetera, to be in the room. But our speakers, our panelists, our leaders, our on stage will be Black. We're going to showcase Black leaders, trailblazers of tomorrow. And I think it's important that while it is Black History Month, and it's an oft-used expression, we're here to make history, this is not going to be us. It's not going to be a pity party, you and me sharing, you know, how many times we've been asked to get somebody's coats. Although we could be a stand-up and maybe make that, you know, kind of for the networking event. We're going to look forward.
And if there's a young Mark Harrison
yeah.
watching this, and you could share 3 sentences with him, her, they, them,
yeah.
what would you say?
Sell yourself to yourself. Sell yourself to others. Sell yourself to the world. In that order.
Awesome. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, buddy.